I'm Mike and Scott, and this is The Pulse, stories about the people and places at the heart of health and science. If you like crime dramas, then you're probably familiar with the kind of scene where detectives find a key clue. A hair. The mystery of who done it suddenly narrows, and investigators are able to match that strand to a suspect. Courts have used hair as powerful pieces of evidence in criminal cases since the 1950s. Until the arrival of DNA analysis, hair was typically compared under a microscope, and it turns out that science and how it was interpreted fell short. Pulse reporter Alana Gordon traces the changing science around hair as forensic evidence and how that is impacting the criminal justice system. Her story begins with one person who was caught in the middle of all of this for decades.
Kirk Odom grew up in Southeast Washington, D.C. He had his challenges.
Growing up, I had asthma. I couldn't get out there and run up and down the street like the other kids, but I didn't give up.
He pushed back. He started exercising and jogging so he could keep up. But that all came to a halt in the spring of 1981, when he was just 18.
One Sunday morning, I was getting ready to go jogging, and the police came to the house and said they have a warrant for my arrest.
A local police officer thought he looked similar to the sketch of a suspect from a recent crime.
And they just took me on out to the precinct, took hair samples. Still, I didn't know what was going on or what was I being charged with.
Turns out, he was being charged with breaking into a woman's apartment and raping her at gunpoint. A key piece of evidence in his subsequent trial were those hair samples. This was the 80s before DNA analysis. An FBI-trained expert basically testified that the hair found at the scene was, under the microscope, similar to Odom's, and that this similarity was really, really rare. As Odom listened, he couldn't understand it.
I was, you know, saying to myself, I knew it wasn't me. It wasn't my hair because I knew I was not there, you know. I wasn't in that lady's house, you know. Nowhere near where she lived.
Still, Odom was convicted.
It was something that was like worse than a nightmare.
He spent more than two decades behind bars. While there, he was sexually assaulted. He contracted HIV. He broke down. He attempted to take his own life.
It was just a complete mess. I mean, it was, mentally, it just tore me down. It had put more fear in me than I ever experienced or even heard of.
A big part of Odom's fate and more than 20 years of trauma in prison had a lot to do with hair. And more specifically, the techniques used to compare his to the one found at the scene of the crime. The FBI had trained experts in this type of microscopic hair comparison for decades.
The technician takes the hair from the container, which has been carefully marked to ensure preservation of the chain of custody. She prepares and mounts it on a labeled slide so that it may be examined, identified, and compared by an examiner who supervises her work.
You can certainly tell a lot from a hair.
This is Skip Palahniuk. He's been obsessed with hairs and microscopes since he was 8 years old. He analyzes evidence under the microscope for a living now at a private lab in Illinois. Palahniuk says you can learn a lot of really important things about hair under the microscope. But as much as he loves the science of hair and what it can tell us,
trying to say if two hairs, let's say, came from the same individual, can't do that so well. And the reason you can't is because there are only a limited number of characteristics that hairs have in the first place.
In other words, hair is just not as unique as we'd like to think. He says comparing hair under the microscope has its place. It can help narrow down which hairs are the best candidates for DNA testing. But
at some point along the way, some people at the FBI and some people in other public sector laboratories developed what I think of as overconfidence in what you can tell from hairs.
A growing chorus of scientists and people in the criminal justice world agree. That includes Chris Fabricant.
I'm the director of strategic litigation at the Innocence Project.
In 2013, Fabricant joined a panel of criminal defense lawyers the Justice Department, and the FBI to review thousands of cases that took place before the year 2000, where hair comparison testimony might have been involved.
It was routinely used.
The audit marks the largest federal post-conviction review of evidence. Fabricant says hair techniques were already in doubt, but it was the exonerations in three high-profile cases that really triggered the widespread audit.
And in those exonerations, there were all FBI agents who had testified in those cases, and all three cases relied heavily on hair microscopy, and all three cases they were wrong, resulting in wrongful conviction.
He says since then, the audit has found that in 90% of the cases they've looked at, the hair analysis was misinterpreted in one way or another. But these issues go beyond hair analysis. In 2009, a National Academy of Sciences report on forensic science added to the increasing evidence against the technique and others. It reported that microscopic hair comparison methods are imprecise and problematic. And on top of that, it found that other comparison disciplines like fingerprints and bite marks and tool marks also lack standards and research to back them up. Karen Cafadar chairs the Department of Statistics at the University of Virginia. She was involved in that report.
And it's not that what they're doing is definitely wrong. It's that for the most part, we don't know.
And fast forward to today, these are still issues. Cafadar says the FBI and the government are doing more research and are trying to develop better standards. But this September, another report came out, this one from the President's Council of Advisors on Science and Technology. And like that 2009 report, it still called into question not just hair, but other comparison disciplines. Cafadar says as it stands, a lot of evidence supporting these techniques is weak.
We're not expecting everything to be as precise as DNA. We're just trying to figure out what we have.
The group has recommended regular assessments, better standards, and more federal funding to study these techniques. Still, even without further study, it seems there's already agreement that relying on comparative hair analysis to link a suspect to a crime just doesn't work. William Fitzpatrick is the longtime district attorney in Onondaga County, New York, and he chairs the National DA's Association.
I can tell you that we haven't used it in my county in decades.
But he does use other comparative techniques, like fingerprints. And he's concerned that these latest reports are creating uncertainty in these other areas. He accepts that more research is a good thing, but he doesn't want these approaches to be thrown out in the meantime.
I think that it would be nothing short of a disaster if you would literally have hundreds, if not thousands, of cases with demonstrably guilty defendants being exonerated because the prosecution would be unable to present scientifically valid evidence that points to the individual's guilt.
He believes it's the role of judges to determine the reliability of forensic evidence. For his part, Chris Fabricant with the Innocence Project does not have the same level of faith in the court system.
The status quo as it exists today in forensic science is that the scientific validity and reliability is determined by scientifically illiterate judges that are presented by scientifically illiterate prosecutors that are defended by scientifically illiterate defense attorneys and are evaluated by 12 scientifically illiterate lay jurors. And the result is a lot of bad science getting into court, and that's happening right now, today, as you and I are speaking.
Which brings us back to Kirk Odom. It turns out he was convicted because of this type of bad science. This vindication took a while, though. After spending 22 years in prison, he was finally let out on parole. It was 2003.
They had me as a registered sex offender, so that really put a lot of stress and strain on me, you know, still trying to find a job.
His case drew the interest of the D.C. Public Defender Service, who had been looking at other cases where hair played a big role. Using DNA evidence, they ruled out Odom as the suspect. He was exonerated. He found out the news on the day he turned 50.
Oh, my goodness. Whew. One birthday present I'll never forget.
On the one hand, Odom says faulty science has forever changed his life. But it's also the power of science and things like advances in DNA testing, even on hair, that still gives him hope.
What science is now is not what it used to be.
So you actually think the science has come around?
Yes, from years ago, yes. And that's a good thing. You know, a real good thing.
For The Pulse, I'm Alana Gordon.